Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Doug Kellen off today, but in his stead, our guest host today is Claudia Hanaberry. Claudia, welcome to the Battleground State Report.
Thanks so much, Michael.
And it's great to have you here. You are my co-author. You are the co-author along with John Harris. The three of us have written a book called The Star News Digital Media Guide to the Constitution and Bill of Rights for Secondary School Students. And you've also worked with us on the Tennessee Star Constitution Bee. That's a big event that that we do in Tennessee. We've done it for three consecutive years, a fourth year coming up in April. And then in December, Michigan, where we have the Michigan Star and another battleground state. We're going to have our first Constitution Bee in Michigan in December, and then Ohio and Minnesota, a couple battleground states. We'll have a Constitution Bee in April, and there's a little secret we can share with people. There will be a National Constitution Bee this year in Washington, D.C., but we can't announce the details yet. It'll be in July. And so that will be an awful lot of fun. And, you know, one of our themes at battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com, it's one of our five titles in our company, Star News Digital Media, leading the way in news and education. And that's why we're focused on teaching kids about the true story of the Constitution. So, but this is political analysis of battleground state. What's going on in battleground states, the 2020 presidential election. So put on your political analyst hat, Claudia.
Yep, got that.
Ready to roll?
Ready to roll.
Okay, so the big news. This week on the presidential election, of course, the Battleground State Report, it's a weekly one-hour radio program where we talk about what's happening here in the battleground state issues. And what we talk about is how the presidential election in November 2020, how that is playing out in these key battleground states. Because one thing we know, Claudia, is this. There are about 20 red states that are going to be voting for President Trump. And there are about 13 blue states, you know, California, Massachusetts,
New York,
Illinois. They're going to vote for whoever the Democrats nominate. So it's the 17 battleground states that are going to determine the presidency. They're sort of up for grabs. Of those, you know, there are probably, I don't know, six that are really the keys. And in my thinking right now, the three most battlegroundy, the three most up for grabs are three states that President Trump won in 2016 to move him towards a 306 to 232 Electoral College victory. That's before the seven faithless electors. That's Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Those are the three, the top three, I think. And then right behind them, Florida, North Carolina, and Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're trying to look at, okay, how is President Trump playing in those battleground states? How are the Democratic candidates playing in the battleground states? And I'm very curious, Claudia, you've lived in one of those key battleground states before in North Carolina, right?
Absolutely. My home. Yes.
So you have a sense of what's going on in North Carolina. We'll talk about that in a second. I want to just step back at the national level. We're seeing the same thing playing out at the national level that we did in 2015 and 2016. All the polls say, oh, yeah, the Democrats are going to beat Donald Trump. You know, Hillary Clinton's going to beat Donald Trump. That's all the national polls. Well, in the popular vote in 2016, she, in fact, did beat Donald Trump. She had 48% of the popular vote. He had 46%. But since most of that came in landslides in leftist California and leftist New York, he easily won the Electoral College. But now you look at these various national polls and it's got, you know, sleepy Joe Biden, China Joe Biden, whatever you call him, up by, you know, 5 to 10 is what you see. Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas.
Pocahontas.
Yeah, up by 5 to 10. Bernie Sanders. Bernie. Our favorite socialist communist. Right? They all. The polls are showing them all up.
Oh, the guy who wants to abort all babies to control the population.
That's Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
Yep. Well, you know, they have winnowed it down, the field of candidates that make it on the stage of debates. They had two debates, two consecutive nights, twice, and 10 on the first night, 10 on the second night, 20 total. It's down to 10 now. This coming Thursday in Houston, you're going to see 10, and I don't know if I can rattle them off the top of my head, but the top three are Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and you've got Kamala Harris, you've got Pete Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, a couple others also Rands. Not on the list. Andrew Yang's on the list. But Marianne Williamson, you know, the spiritualist. Yeah. Are you upset about that?
The crystals woman.
The crystals. When we come back, I'm going to get your take, your handicapping of those candidates, Claudia, after the break. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here, sitting in for Doug Kellett, my good friend, co-author, Claudia Henneberry, co-author of the Star News Digital Media Guide to the Constitution and Bill of Rights. You can go to any of our sites and you can buy a copy of the Star News Digital Media Guide to the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Go to TennesseeStar.com or TheMichiganStar.com or TheOhioStar.com or TheMinnesotaSun.com, and you can go and you can buy a copy of that book. It's designed for secondary school students, and it's the entire basis for our Constitution Bees. And Claudia, you have been one of our judges.
I have.
And you have a good background. You were the teacher of social studies for many years, right?
I was. I was a high school teacher, and mostly U.S. history and world history and anything else history they'd throw at me.
And so you've written several chapters, and on another program we were talking, you wrote a chapter called A Republic If You Can Keep It, which is the famous... tell our audience how that phrase came about.
Well, when Benjamin Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention back in 1787, he was asked by a socialite named Mrs. Powell, and she was wondering what the legislators in that hall, in Independence Hall, had written for our government, and in actuality, it was a republic, and so she wanted to know, what is it that you have given us, sir? And he answered her, of course, it's a republic if you can keep it, madam.
And boy, 230-odd years later, we're constantly wondering if we can keep it. And
seriously,
of course, this presidential campaign is a key element of learning if we can keep it. By the way, I have to give you a compliment here. It looks like Chief Justice Neil Gorsuch is copying you. He must have read the book and read your chapter.
He had to have, because he named his book after
He named his chapter. Book. It's coming out on Tuesday, A Republic If You Can Keep It. And so obviously he read and was impressed by your chapter on describing that. And but we are in the midst right now of a presidential election determined by the Electoral College vote. We are a republic, not a democracy. If we were a democracy and the majority ruled, we would be now talking about President Hillary Clinton.
Unfortunately, we would, but we're not.
Thank goodness we're a republic and not a democracy.
Amen.
So, and as you know, the way it works, it's right there in the Constitution. With a little help from the 12th Amendment.
Yeah.
After Aaron Burr engaged in a little skullduggery in the 1800 election.
That's right.
We might as well talk about that, how the Electoral College currently works. We have that in our book on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights for secondary school students. So the way it was envisioned and currently works now in when you go to vote for president, you're actually not voting for the candidate itself. You're voting for a slate of Electoral College voters.
Electors.
Electors. Yes. And each elector is pledged to a particular candidate. And each state secures a certain number of electors, right? That's determined how?
Well, I mean, the slate of electors can be appointed by, I don't know, the party leaders.
Typically, the party leader would appoint the slate of the electors. Do you know anybody who's actually been an elector?
I did a while back, I guess, when I was still living in North Carolina. But it's just escaped me for now.
But these are individuals. Like, I remember there was a guy who was involved in sort of county politics that was named to be an elector. And these are the people that are selected. And the number for each state is basically this. The little formula is you take two senators and you add the number of representatives
exactly.
in the state. And that's the number of, you know, electors in that state.
Or state.
So here if we're based out of Tennessee. In Tennessee, we have 9 congressional districts, 2 U.S. senators, as every state has 2. So there are 11 Electoral College votes up for grabs in Tennessee in 2020. Now, there's very little doubt who will win those 11 Electoral College votes.
Let's hope we keep it that way.
Well, it'll be Donald Trump. But in another one of our states, in Michigan, for instance, Michigan is a battleground state. Mm-hmm. President Trump won Michigan by, I think, like 12,000 votes. In 2016, they have 16 Electoral College votes, 16 electors picked there. And that's very much in doubt. I had a sense that back in September of 2016, I don't know if you were there, but I went and I spoke to a local group here in Tennessee, the Williamson County Republican Women's Group. Were you there at that speech?
Of course.
You were there.
I have been an officer with RWWC.
Okay, so then you can verify what I'm about to say is a true fact.
Yeah.
I went, and everybody was down in the dumps that day because they've been reading the polls, right? And they said, oh, Donald Trump is going to lose. Donald Trump is going to lose. But I knew something that nobody else knew in the way that I knew it.
Hmm.
What I knew was that Steve Bannon, who was my who hired me at Breitbart News in 2012, and is a brilliant guy. He had a strategy that I knew would work. And when in August of 2016 he was named to be the executive chairman of the Trump campaign, I knew that Trump was going to win because, you know, refugees were a big issue then, and I could see it from my reporting, particularly in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And so in September of 2016, when I gave a speech to the Williamson County Republican women, mm-hmm. I predicted that night in that speech, and there were, I don't know, like 100 women in that audience, I predicted that Donald Trump would win the presidency with 300 Electoral College votes. And everybody in the audience they were very skeptical
mm-hmm.
at that time. But they were happy that at least somebody thought that would be the case.
Well, yeah, and we are extremely happy that that did happen. Unfortunately, I think Marco Rubio won Williamson County.
He won Williamson County in the primary, but in the general election, President Trump easily won in Tennessee 60% to 36%. I think it may be even higher this summer. I must tell you, though, I'm looking at it. Now, this is not 2 months out from the election. The election will be November 2020. I have to say, as it stands today, putting on my honest analyst hat, I think that my guess, if I had to guess, that the outcome in 47 states will be the same as it was last time.
I hope you're right.
But in 3 states that the president won right now, I don't think he's ahead. Michigan, 16 Electoral College votes.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, I think they have 10 Electoral College votes. And Pennsylvania, they have 20 Electoral College votes. I think he's behind in those three states that he won.
And that's certainly not good, but we do have a year. So
there's over a year before that will happen. But again, if that were to happen, and again, lots going to happen. You're looking at a total there of 46 Electoral College votes.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the 306 that he won November 2016,
yeah,
and you subtract 46, you're down to 260, which is below the mm-hmm. 270 that you need to win. So right now, it's very close, but I think it's there's a lot of ground to be made up by President Trump. That's my view, anyways. When we come back, we didn't get to your rating of these 10 Democratic presidential candidates, but I'll weigh in as well. When we come back, the 10 remaining Democrats on the stage, we'll kind of rate them and see what their chances are. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy with guest host Claudia Hanneberry. And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. You can go see our online news site, battlegroundstatenews.com. Battlegroundstatenews.com. All the news that's going on in the Battleground States. You know, our theme here is, how will it play in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? I love alliterations, Claudia, as you know. And, you know, that phrase used to be, you know, when they had Broadway shows, they would say, they would test them out. And they'll say, well, how will it play in Peoria, Illinois?
Yeah.
We can't say Peoria because Illinois is not a battleground state. Even though, you know, we live here in Nashville, Tennessee. I think just about everybody who's leaving Illinois is moving to Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, I've seen that too. You mean Cook County. Cook County runs things in Illinois.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, their strategy is not a good strategy.
Mm-mm.
They want to take every awful liberal policy that failed in Illinois, which they're fleeing because it's so awful. Now they flee to the wonderful Tennessee. You know, we have no state income tax. We have great economic growth. We have low regulations. They want to impose those policies here.
I know. Don't they know what caused it in Illinois?
The guys, wake up and smell the coffee.
Seriously.
You know, if you want to do that, just stay in Illinois. Don't come to Tennessee. Don't come to Tennessee. Well, did you see this? CNN, the Communist News Network, what do we call those guys? They had this past week they had a 7-hour extravaganza.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see it, for goodness sake. I don't think I could have stomached that.
It's on climate change, alleged.
I heard.
Now, we do have a climate.
Mm-hmm.
The temperatures do change over time. Well, they're up a little, maybe they're down a little, maybe they're about the same. You know, scientists who actually study this stuff, it's inconclusive about. I guess it's up a little bit, but maybe not that much over the past 17 years. But in man's conceit, they think that, well, our activities can change the climate. There's no evidence to support that. But if you're a Democrat, you believe that. I was listening to. You know, you ever listen to Mark Levin on radio?
Love Mark Levin.
Isn't he fun? And so Mark Levin the other night was talking about, he played over this 1992 comedy routine by George Carlin. You remember the late, great George Carlin?
I loved him too.
And Carlin he went off on this deal about the utter conceit of limousine liberals. George Carlin said this, who thought that they could actually influence the climate. They can't. I mean, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so we had 7 hours of this religious dogma coming from CNN and all of, you know, the Democratic and Elizabeth Warren echoing that great scientist Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, the one who doesn't know how to use a garbage disposal, doesn't know what it is, that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she, Elizabeth Warren, says, we only have 11 years left.
Yeah, well, we didn't have but, 12 years left back in 1997 or something like that.
Well, you go back to 18. Remember the economist Thomas Malthus in 1800? He said, we're going to run out of food in 30 years.
Yeah.
This is Malthusian economics. It was disproven back then, and it's disproven today. But if you're a Democrat, apparently you don't read those actual facts. So we have 10 remaining candidates who will be on the stage in the debate. And I think it's ABC. It's a debate that will be held on Thursday. And these 10, you know, the leading ones right now in most of the polls is Joe Biden.
Yep.
Who is utterly compromised on China. We've talked about this before, his son, Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden, who has no investment experience whatsoever. He did get kicked out of the Navy for using cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, well, it doesn't count if you're a Democrat. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that guy. He actually, you know, flew over on Air Force Two with his dad in 2013, stepped off, had the cameras take the pictures, and then, you know, went off to have these private meetings with the Bank of China, which is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we think you're such a brilliant guy. Oh, by the way, your dad is vice president. We are going to give you $1.5 billion, more than $1 billion. And you put it in your little hedge fund and you can make investments. And, you know, you get like, I don't know, if you manage a hedge fund, you get like a 2% fee on all of that. You know, that's a lot of dough. And so Joe Biden would have us believe that he's not compromised in dealing with China, even though his son got $1.5 billion.
Well, it's typical of any Democrat, it seems. They can play the market. They get insider trading information. They can do whatever they want. They can commit crimes. They can take home confidential or classified information.
I.e. James Comey.
And stash it in their bathroom or wherever
they really
want and get away with it.
Yeah. So, but of course, now the other candidate there is Elizabeth
Pocahontas
Warren, who since 1984, you know, I've written about this extensively in my Breitbart column. She first claimed Native American ancestry in this Powwow Chow cookbook. Remember that?
No.
So it was put out by the five tribes, of which Cherokees were one, and she put out recipes that were like, she apparently plagiarized them from a guy in the New York Times, you know, like cold crab with mayonnaise. That's a big Cherokee recipe. Anyways, that emboldened her. And then the next year, she was an obscure faculty member at the University of Texas Law School. And she claimed in her Texas bar application that she was Native American. No evidence. Zero zip nada. Mm-hmm. And no documentary evidence whatsoever, except, you know, family legend, family lore. No DNA evidence whatsoever at the time. Claimed that and used that to leverage to get a job at a better law school, University of Pennsylvania Law School, where she claimed to be Native American. She wasn't.
So no white privilege for her.
Yeah, well, she got white privilege. Yeah. She falsely claimed to be Native American. And then she goes, gets a job. She does the same thing, leverages that, claims to be Native American, tells everybody she's a woman of color, the color being white.
White.
Gets a job at Harvard. And Harvard then files reports with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission claiming they have one Native American on the faculty. Her. Not true. Not true.
Mm-mm.
It's never apologized for that. So she used this false claim of Native American ancestry to get ahead and has never acknowledged that it's a lie. Then in October, she does this DNA test and she pretends that the results show that she is, in fact, Native American. Well, what do the results show? She goes to this guy, Carlos Bustamante. She has supposedly a DNA test, and Carlos Bustamante reviews those results. And his results show that her DNA shows that she has between 1/64th and 1/1024th DNA in common with residents of, wait for it, Mexico, Colombia, and Peru. Now, Mexico, Colombia, and Peru, those are not what you would call, those are not Native Americans.
No.
They're not Cherokee, they're not Native American. So no DNA evidence tying her to any Native American tribes. So she tries to call this, proof that she actually is, you know, at best she has, you know, between 0.1% and 1.6% DNA in common with residents of Peru, Mexico, and Colombia, zero DNA in common with Native Americans from the USA. And she tries to claim that that proves that she, in fact, does have Native American ancestry. And it was right for her to claim minority status. Wrong.
Sort of like Kamala Harris claiming that she's an African American, which she's not. So.
Well, she's Jamaican,
yeah,
Indian.
Yeah.
And she was born here. Mm-hmm. But, of course, her great-great-great-grandfather was a white guy in Jamaica who was the largest slave owner Jamaica.
So white privilege for
her.
Yeah,
there you go. Hey, you're listening to the Battleground State Report. When we come back, more on what's happening in this presidential election season. Michael Patrick Leahy here with guest host Claudia Henneberry.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy, and sitting in for Doug Kellett, our good friend, our co-author, former social studies teacher, Constitution Beat judge, Claudia Henneberry. You know, Claudia, time flies when you're having fun.
Morning, Michael. Sure does. That's for sure.
We are already in our last segment here on the Battleground State Report. And we still haven't gotten to our handicapping of how these various left-wing lunatics who are running for the Democratic nomination are doing. I don't know. Of the 10 who will be on the stage, I think it's probably fair to call 9 of them left-wing lunatics.
Absolutely.
Joe Biden, what do we call him?
Sleepy Joe. Lunchbox Joe, Anvil Joe.
Anvil Joe, yeah. Yeah, that's what Rush Limbaugh calls him.
Yeah.
I do think, though, he will be a purveyor of left-wing lunatic policies if he were to be elected.
Well, of course. I mean, he has to toe the line with all the rest of these crazies.
Yeah, and he's... I don't think he really stands for anything other than I'm Joe Biden and look at me and, you know.
And I think the poor guy has issues. I think he's losing it.
Yeah, is he? Several people have commented on this. He does not seem to be articulating words in a very compelling manner. In other words, he's stumbling over his words and he's getting his facts wrong. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, he supposedly met with the Parkland students.
These are the Parkland, Florida students been involved in the shooting down there. And so he met with them?
He thought that he was vice president when that happened, which he was not. No, Mike Pence was vice president when the Parkland shooting happened.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing about Joe Biden is, of course, he's always had a problem telling the truth.
Yeah.
And plagiarizing. There, you know, when he ran for president in 1988, by the way, he's never had a real job. You know, I mean, he graduated from the University of Delaware, and then he went to law school at Syracuse University. He had a plagiarism issue, by the way, there at Syracuse University.
No surprise.
And then, so plagiarism has sort of plagued him, I would say. So he at the age of 29, he was elected to the Senate from Delaware and has really served there, I think, since 1972 until 2008 when he was elected vice president, served there from 2009 to 2017, and sort of been doing the circuit ever since. Never had a real job, though. I mean, he makes money being on boards and giving speeches. I think he made like $15 million, but that's not a real job. That's sort of a glamour celebrity type thing. He's never had any real executive responsibilities whatsoever. But you listen to him, and he jumbles things up. He gets facts wrong.
He does, and he likes to fondle women's hair and get close to them and whisper into their little ear.
Yeah, it's a little creepy, I guess. And
Creepy Joe.
You get the sense that maybe his time has come and gone. Don't you think?
Maybe. Well, it always seems like that with Democrats. It's sort of a, incestual situation going on. They choose the same old people it's your turn. Now it's your turn to be president.
Well, there's Biden. He's like 76. And then we have Bernie Sanders. I think he's like 77, 78.
Bernie Sanders. Oh, absolutely. He's got to be way up there. And I think he's older than 76.
Did you notice if we look at the demeanor of these guys, Joe Biden is bumbling up facts. He was trying to tell a story about some Afghan war story, and he got the details all wrong. And, of course, the Washington Post, which is now owned by Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder.
Talking about incest.
Yeah. So he actually, the Washington Post criticized him for getting that story wrong. Kind of a signal that maybe Jeff Bezos says, it's not for you this year. But then the spring chicken of all this is 70-year-old Elizabeth Warren, who, I will give her this, she is energetic.
She does. She loves to march in the gay pride parades, if you saw that. I don't know.
but stylistically, she has energy. Whatever it is, she's got a plan for it.
She's got it.
Not a good plan, a bad plan, a socialist plan. She does have a speaking demeanor that kind of reminds me of very close to the fingernails on chalkboard of Hillary Clinton, right?
Oh.
The screechiness. Yeah. So again, you look at likability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not really there. I think if you look at those three, Bernie Sanders is not likable. He's just not. Do you hear this story about he went to a restaurant in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Just like past week.
Bernie Sanders goes to a restaurant in San Francisco.
And he was rude to the waitstaff.
And the joke.
Did you see that? This is not a joke or satire. It's true.
Could be a joke.
Yeah. And so Elizabeth Warren, who insulates herself from the world and just, puts her own very bad plans out there and has a screechy voice and promises that she's a fighter. But apparently the only fighting in her family background is Indian fighters.
Shooting.
Yeah, we got a story coming up in Breitbart that I have it, that she's a direct descendant. Her great-great-great-grandfather, Jonathan Crawford, enlisted for 6 months in a Tennessee militia that went to Florida and fought in the Seminole Wars from 1837 to 1838.
No.
Yeah. His widow got a pension because he fought there. And so,
oh my
gosh. So the Indian fighter, and then two of her great-great-great-grandfathers were in the Tennessee militia in 1836 that rounded up the Cherokees. So she's a fighter by trade, but the heritage is what they used to call Indian fighters.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to work out so well.
No.
So, but she's not likable. Now, Joe Biden is likable.
Yeah, you got to give him that. Maybe a Bill Clinton way.
A Daffy uncle sort of way. Oh, there's Uncle Joe. Yeah, okay, Joe. Okay, Uncle Joe.
Yeah, that's just old Uncle Joe
just
again.
likable, but not really inspiring confidence. Now, let's contrast this with Donald Trump. As a person, Donald Trump is very likable.
He is absolutely wonderful.
But he's a very aggressive. Yeah. And if you're on the other side, he'll come after you. He'll say bad.
He's a very loyal person.
But, I think I've told you, I've interviewed him. And he's very, very likable. He's a very good listener. This comes from his sales background. So he's a very likable guy in person. He's being portrayed, and of course he's a little bit out there in terms of his aggressiveness and his stance. And, you can see why that rubs some people the wrong way. I'm looking at, those are the top three, two likable, two unlikable, one marginally likable. I mean, is Kamala Harris likable?
No, she screeches too much, I think.
She screeches too much? She's too strident?
Yeah.
And Pete Buttigieg doesn't come off as likable at all. He comes off as, you know, self-righteous and, arrogant.
Hmm. Yeah, Mayor Pete.
I don't know if you knew this. This may be a shock to you. He's gay, you know.
I know.
And
he's
married to a man. A
lot of points there.
He gets identity politics. But again, he's not a likable guy. All right. So let's look at the others. Beto O'Rourke. Now, his main campaign theme is, I'm going to use the worst possible word. The word that George Carlin said was on the seven deadly. Think of the worst one.
Oh, yeah.
That's
okay.
The word he's using all the time now. That's his campaign theme.
And isn't he the guy who made the cameras come in with him at a dentist appointment?
Yeah. So I don't know what his campaign is, but he's not likable either. So he's not likable. That brings us to Let Me Eat My Salad with a Comb, Amy Klobuchar. You remember that story?
I do. I remember that.
So, and her staff hates her. She's mean. And she yells at them all the time. And apparently, they did not bring a fork for her to eat her salad on an airplane once.
I remember her. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just remember her at the hearing for
Brett Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, thank you very much, at Brett's hearing. And she was sort of implying that Brett Kavanaugh was an alcoholic, sort of like her father. So she was telling the personal story and trying to associate that with Judge Kavanaugh. And she...
Well, Judge Kavanaugh likes beer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no indication that he's...
No, and that was what?
Drinking problem.
Several years ago, that was 25 or...
Yeah, 35,
so
whatever.
Years ago.
By the way, did you see the lawyer for Christina Blasey Ford has revealed what the real motivation was? It was all about opposing changes to abortion rights.
Well, of course. I mean, just embarrass yourself.
This came out last week. Okay, so we are in search of a likable Democratic candidate for president. Amy Klobuchar is out. She's mean to her staff, and she orders them around, and she eats her salad with a comb. And then she washed it out, and she's still using the comb.
So disgusting.
So who else do we have? Oh, we have Julian Castro. Julian Castro, whose mom was a socialist, left-wing communist organizer.
Yes.
And who wants to bring that back and take all your guns. That guy.
Well, he has the appropriate name, Castro.
Yeah, just what the United States needs.
Mm-hmm.
A Castro for president.
And isn't Yang? Did we miss Yang? He's in there.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
No. So let's talk about Andrew Yang.
Okay.
So he wants to give everybody $1,000.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that about him?
Yeah, I heard that.
So $1,000 a month. He didn't say where it's going to come from. Okay, but gives you $1,000 a month.
Well, your pocket and my pocket.
Yeah, I would say. And then he wants everybody, because it's global warming time and the seas are going to rise. He wants you all to go to high ground.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Where does he fit on your likability scale?
I don't really study these people too much, too
often.
But
is he likable?
His name is kind of cute.
Yang.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so he gets points for Yang, but maybe not so many points for going to high ground. Last one here to bring up, I think, in this the terrible 10. Corey Spartacus Booker.
Oh, yeah, Spartacus.
Has he ever gone by a mirror he hasn't looked in to see his reflection?
Seriously doubt it. I think of the Carole King song when I...
You're so vain?
Yeah, when I hear about old...
Cory Booker.
Booker,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the guy is just a walking press release for how great he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, really, besides being a loudmouth... I don't think he's likable, I guess, is the bottom line.
No, he's not. He's just too, he's angry.
The one who actually I think is likable, although loony, won't be on stage, Marianne Williamson. I don't think she's unlikable. She's just amusing.
She's very, very loony and very amusing, very young.
Yeah.
She had her start on the stage with Oprah.
Yeah, she's not unlikable.
No.
But she's loony. So we have Loopy Joe, Looney, Marianne Williamson, and Yang, Give Me $1,000. And that's it.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us in this week's edition of Battleground State. Claudia, will you come back sometime? And
I'd love it. Yeah, sure.
All
thanks
right.
so much.
And thanks. Hey, we'll be back next week with another edition of Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.